23rd.
22nd.
2003. This is Gordon Puller interviewing Liz Pennington at the Dig a Frognack camp. Liz, before we start, could you give us a little background on who you are, where you were born, and who your family members are?
Sure. My name is Elizabeth Duvall, originally. That was my maiden name. I'm 47 years old. I was born in Kodiak at the Naval Hospital. And my mom is Tina Larson, or was Tina Larson. And my brothers and sisters are Olga Pesterkoff, Julie Kaiser, Rick Roland, and Benita Roland.
So you were born in Kodiak, but you were raised in a Frognack?
Raised in a Frognack.
And when were you born?
1957. I'll be 40. I guess I don't know how old I am.
When is your birthday?
December 21st.
Oh, okay. So you were pretty young growing up in a Frognack. What are your memories of that time?
I remember being a young child there, playing on the beach, gardening with my grandma. I remember my Uncle Johnny and other family members that would come around a Frognack. Magnell, Gray Beck, and her boys, Alvin and Tony. Auntie Laura Freeman and her kids. She had Dick, Lois, and Bob. And Bob used to come to a Frognack and fish with Uncle Johnny when he was a teenager.
And who is Uncle Johnny?
Uncle Johnny is John Larson, and he died in the 64 earthquake.
Uh-huh. So did you start school in a Frognack?
Yeah. I was the only girl in the kindergarten class, and it was myself and Wayne LeKing.
So what do you remember about
the time
the school?
We both had to sit at the same desk. It was horrible. You know, when you're a kid, you don't want to, you know, associate with the other sex. We had to be together the whole time, and that was brutal. And then after the tidal wave, we both went to Port Lyons.
So you were in kindergarten when the tidal wave hit?
Yeah.
Do you remember anything else about the school, who your teacher was or what it was like?
I don't remember the name of the teacher. I know we had a male teacher, and he was pretty tall. The teacher that was, I'm thinking that he was in charge of the school. Maybe not my teacher in particular, but all of us were in the same room. I remember a lot of the grades were in the same room. There weren't too many of us. Olga was in the third grade at the time, and I remember her being in the same classroom with me.
Do you remember the tidal wave?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I do.
Can you tell me about it?
I remember playing on the... I was sitting on the porch in front of our house, and it was real nice and sunny, and the air was warm for the day because it was starting to warm up. And the ground started shaking, Mom ran out of the door, and she said, "Get out of the house, get away from the house." So we went out, and the ground was moving real hard, so we all pretty much fell to our feet, and our bodies fell on the ground, and I remember hanging on to the grass because our feet kept going up. So every time a big rolling wave would come, or they kept coming in succession, we'd be bounced up and down. It was a very very hard earthquake. And right after that, the cows raced through town, and they came from the airstrip area where the Nelsons lived, and they went toward Alutown. I remember that. And somebody came running and saying, there's a tidal wave coming, we need to head to higher ground. And at that point it was pretty much a blur, because I guess when you're a kid, you just don't remember all the details. The important things I think you remember, because one of the important things I remember is our little dog went under our house, and Olga wouldn't leave without the dog. And we couldn't get the dog out. And Mom just ended up dragging Olga as she's screaming. And we ran to Grandma's house, which was about a half a mile down the beach and back behind a lake. And we got Uncle Johnny's Jeep, and Grandma was talking to Johnny on the radio at that time, and we could hear him talking, and he was saying, "We're heading out to deep water. There's six of us, and five or six, I can't remember right now. But Kanagan had just made it over the last wave, and he said there were like big rollers at the time, and there were a lot of them, and they're really big. And he said that he made it over one, and he said, "Mama, I don't know if I'm going to make it." And as he was talking to Grandma, my mom started talking to him too, and she told him, or he told them, that he doesn't know if he's going to see him again. And that was the last they heard. All they heard after that was static, because his boat crashed on Spruce Cape. The name of his boat was the Spruce Cape.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned your grandma. Who is she?
Olga Larson. She was an old lady when I met her when I was born. Mama was born when she was in her, when she turned 60. So she had my mom when she was really old. And she had my mom with her second husband, who was Louis Larson, and they had several children. And she had a previous marriage also to Anton, of which she had just several children. Mm. I actually have the record of all that. Let's see. Olga, she was born in a fog neck, and it says cut the knee. She married Anton Larson, a Norwegian immigrant who came to Kodiak in 1887 with pioneers on the 76, which I think is a boat. Anton would have been married to Jenny Pesterkoff from Musinki and had four children, Martha, Lawrence, Sarah, and Johnny. Anton traded his house and barn for Anton Larsen Island from his father-in-law. After Jenny died, Anton married Olga Nomov in October of 1904. Together they had Laura, Martha, Lawrence. Lawrence died in Oregon in 1922, and Mary, who died in a fog neck when she was two. Olga left the island, Anton Larsen Island, June 7th, 1912, the day after the Katmai eruption, and went to Yuzinki until the end of August and then back to a fog neck. She then married Louis Larsen, and together they had Annie, who died in a fog neck, Eddie, Larissa, who is Laura Freeman, Magnell, Johnny, Lawrence, who they nicknamed Pinky, and Tina, who is nicknamed Tootsie. Anton picked up Laura, Martha, and Lawrence from Olga in a fog neck. And at that time, he had also put Olga in jail in Kodiak for being a bad woman, being a bad wife, and you were able to do that back then. Lois and I actually found record of Grandma being in jail in Kodiak during this time. Too bad you can't do that now, huh? She died of... Mary died of sleeping sickness. I think that's crib death, right?
It's what?
Sudden infant crib death.
Oh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sometime around the age of two. When they returned to the island, there was only a cow and a calf left. The chickens were in the house and the door was open. Laura Olson didn't see her mom again until the year her daughter Myrtle was born in 1926. So that was 1912 or thereafter to 1926. The kids were taken away from Grandma and raised by Anton Larsen. Laura moved to Kodiak from Anton Larsen Island with her husband Ole Olson when Myrtle was born. After the tidal wave in 64, Olga's home was destroyed along with the village of Fog Neck. She resettled in Port Lyons. She died in our nursing home in Anchorage and was buried in Port Lyons.
Do you have any recollection as a child of seeing doctors? I understand that they came to a Fog Neck on a boat.
As a matter of fact, I do. I remember the doctors coming and giving us checkups, and we all had to go all at once. I remember the dentist in particular, because it seemed like we were all a science experiment to him. And... I think they were all on a mission to save our teeth.
So they did the work on a boat? You had to go out to the boat?
I don't remember being on a boat.
Oh, okay.
But I remember them coming on shore.
Oh, okay. I had heard that for a time earlier, I think maybe during the 1950s when all the kids needed to go out to the boat where the to be treated.
I'd have to think about that.
But it may have changed by by your time. So
we lived near Betty Nelson. So Betty Nelson was a health aide. And anytime anything happened, we would just go to her house, which was next door.
Mm-hmm. Are there any memories that really stand out from that part of your childhood?
Oh, yeah. I think the one that stands out the most is my Uncle Johnny making ice cream in the wintertime. And I think about that so much. During the winter, my mom would make a custard on the stove. And she would put together sugar and cream and... some type of flavoring, either chocolate or strawberry. And I remember her cooking this mixture for forever, it seemed like, on those old-fashioned stoves. You've seen them? The stoves with the, that you have to put wood in, or oh. no, oil.
Oh.
And it takes a while, the whole thing has to warm up. And my uncle would have this container, and it had a blade inside of it, and they'd pour that hot custard in, and then he'd go out to the lake, which was in front of Grandma's house, and chop the ice and bring the ice back, and with rock salt they'd make ice cream. It was the best ice cream. It was like bath. It was just like the real creamy good ice cream that you buy that now that's really expensive. it was really good stuff. Other things I remember, my Uncle Johnny bringing home lots and lots of groceries in the fall.
Is related to it.
I remember ice skating out in a pond in front of the house in the wintertime. And lots of people would ice skate. As a matter of fact, in the wintertime, I remember going to school the back way through the lakes on ice skates. Because we'd normally have to walk. And we lived, see where the end of the airstrip is there?
Uh-huh.
And there's a little lake up to the right of that. And then there's a little point out in the water where it looks like there's a rock. We lived next to that, or just to the right of that point there in that area. But we'd have to walk all the way out to Elliottown to go to school. But it was quicker just to go out and skate in the back. And that's one of the memories I had, was skating to school. Another memory is playing Lapture. We'd have some huge games of Lapture, and the adults would actually go play. And that's one of the things that I don't see anymore.
Can you explain the game?
You have two lines, and I don't know the distance for the lines. You have one line here in about 100, I don't know. I'm not good with distance. Maybe 200 feet or so. I don't know. There'd be another parallel line. And there'd be a group of people in, or the number of people would be divided in half, I remember that, and half would line up to bat and the other half would be out in the field. And you'd have somebody who hit the ball, and if they could hit it far enough, they could go to the other side or to the other line, and they could wait for a batter, and you could have a whole group lined up ready to come back with a good hitter on your side. And I don't know how many strikes they had to have before they're out, but it was fun.
So is this the same game that's sometimes called Aleut baseball?
Yeah, Luptook, Lapture, all that. It was fun. Oh, it was fun. We'd have the biggest games out in front of the house there.
So do you remember moving to Port Lyons?
Uh-huh.
What are your first memories about arriving there?
I remember I remember living at Airport Heights Elementary School in Anchorage for 3 months. And then coming back to Port Lions, or coming to Port Lions, and it was so so different. There was nothing familiar. You know how when you go home, everything's familiar, and you're happy to see the same trees or the same walkway and things like that. When we went to Port Lions, I remember there were trees cut everywhere, and it just looked so raw. And it wasn't familiar, it wasn't home. But I remember one of the first times we made it to the village, or to Port Lions, there was a big meeting in the community hall where everybody started arguing about their houses. Who was going to get what house, and why they should get this, and why that so-and-so shouldn't get that. And, you know, just like, okay, you guys. Let's leave all that in a fog neck and start fresh here.
Do you think that any of that was related to how a fog neck was had the different sections
of
town?
You bet it was. Which, and you know, that was actually a good thing. You know, that was one of the positive aspects of moving to Port Lions is that boundary line was eliminated. There was a definite Alutown this and the other side this. And I think it was an attitude. And that didn't need to be there. I think people had to get along once they moved to Port Lions. And there were a lot of old hostilities that I don't think they're there anymore.
So how long was it before you had an opportunity to see a fog neck again?
I went back to a fog neck 2 summers ago. My sister was running this camp here, and she took a group of us to Alutown, and we got off on the beach there, and we walked from... Well, first we went up to Graveyard Point, because there's a bunch of our old family buried there, and... we looked at some of the graves. And then we walked over to the house, and that had been the first time I'd been there since the 64 quake. I hadn't set foot on it. And I remember sitting or standing at that goofy little house and just crying my eyes out. Mostly it was, I should have done that years ago, because I didn't realize I didn't know that I needed to go back there and put closure.
So, once you were established in Port Lions and started school there, how was that different? Were you still sharing a desk with... was it Wayne McKean?
No, thank goodness. We had our own desks. Very lucky. But we were all still in the same classroom. I think there were two classrooms right after the tidal wave, and then we eventually got three. We were really growing. Yeah, I think that there's a lot of... I think that when people go through a traumatic event like that, like the tidal wave, I think it's critical that they go back and take care of that, because it felt like there was a big void in my life until mm-hmm. I went back, and it was like, by golly, I could go on now. Mm-hmm. You know, this is what happened, and I had nightmares about it. I remember having nightmares for years and years and years afterward. Wake up in the middle of the night screaming. And after going back, my nightmares stopped. And I, you know, you don't consciously know that. I don't think people consciously know that traumatic events like that could alter your life so profoundly.
So you mentioned living at Airport Heights Elementary School in Anchorage. You actually stayed at the school for 3 months?
Oh, yeah, we did. After the wave came through, I just heard Carl say, "There goes the neighborhood." After the 64 tidal wave, our house was in a lake, and we couldn't stay there anymore. So we were transported. Mullen, Nadia Mullen's husband, what's his name? I don't remember his first name right offhand. He took us in his boat up to Seward, where we got on a bus. And they drove us up to Anchorage. And we had a few personal belongings, a few clothes, and that was it, nothing else. And we went to Airport Heights Elementary School. And I remember sitting in the hallway for days. We actually slept in the hallway in the main entrance until we could get a classroom. And I remember sleeping on the floor, on that really hard, cold floor. We slept there, and we lived there for 3 months.
So were there a lot of other people from Frogneck there as well?
Not just from Frogneck, but from Kodiak and from Seward, from all over the place. Mm-hmm. And I remember the attitude of the people that lived nearby Airport Heights, because we were mostly Native people that were there, and a lot of the kids in the area were not allowed to come over and play with us.
So was school in session there at the...
No, none of the school was canceled for the year. And actually, I thought that I was just being sensitive to the way people were treating us. However, I've worked in the Anchorage School District, and I've met people who have who actually lived in the Airport Heights area since that time, in the last couple years. I met one man who is a teacher still in the school district, and I was telling him about the treatment that we got in that area, and he said that wasn't just a feeling, that was a fact. He said most of the parents in that area would not let their kids play with us, that they weren't allowed to come over to the school and be near us.
So getting back to Port Lyons, once you were established there and got into a routine, what are some of your memories about growing up in Port Lyons? What are anything that stands out, happy times or sad times?
I think that the grown-ups, I guess you call them the grown-ups,
tried real hard to establish a nice lifestyle for us, and create happy memories to start with. The first year that we were there, they scheduled like a 4th of July celebration. And this was the summer following, or the first summer that we were there.
Would this be the summer of 1964?
No, 65.
65.
Yeah. And they made a just the best celebration. We had booths for pie eating contests and going up a pole, you know, people trying to climb a pole, like loggers.
Mm-hmm.
And all the older games and activities that, more Norwegian style, I think. It was so much fun. Oh, you were talking about things that stood out in the village. I remember one thing that my mom and Uncle Johnny used to do all the time is play the accordion. Always. And people would come by with guitars, and another person would play spoons, and they just have the biggest... I know they call it, the Beverly Hillbillies call it a shindig, you know. You know what I mean. But they'd have these spontaneous get-togethers. My mom loved to play the accordion. She was so good at it, and she could just sing beautifully. My Uncle Johnny could play just as well. They're very musical.
Yeah. Anything else you can think of that time period?
I'm trying to think. I remember one of the things that I remember about being young in a Pognak are the number of grave sites. They were everywhere. There was one right beside Betty Nelson's house in the trees. There was another one near the church area. There were some behind Grandma's house. There were some over by Auntie Sarah's house on the other side. They're everywhere. Old graves. You could see the old crosses, and you know they were old when I was there because they were rotting away and trees had already been growing through them. Just a lot of areas where there were graves. So weird. Spooky. one of the things that I remember too... one of the things that kind of struck in my mind was a lot of times the adults never watched the kids. It didn't seem like they were. Because it seemed like we ran wild and free, and we had all the freedoms you could possibly imagine. But I think there was a method. I think there was a way they did it. And I remember playing as a kid, but always in the back of my mind were all these stories about spirits and places that I wasn't supposed to go to because there was a story attached to it, if that makes any sense. I couldn't go over to... past this one little lake that had a rock in the middle of it that had like trees growing on it, and it was about the size of this, you know, this 8-foot table, maybe a little wider. The rock was in the middle of this lake, and it was more like a little pond.
But I couldn't go past that because there's a lady that lived, that used to live on that rock, and she would grab kids if they went by there. So it was that was the way I think that they took care of you, because those stories were the ones that kept you from doing things you weren't supposed to do. A lot of times I hear the elders talking about how they were always honest, and they didn't even think about lying. They didn't think about doing something sneaky, but I think we were all kept in line with these stories.
I've heard some other people say that it was expected that any adults in the village would
take care of you,
say something if they saw a child doing something that wasn't appropriate, that they would intervene, whether or not they were the parent.
Well, I think that's true to some degree, but I've thought about that. I thought about, you know, the whole... I think it's just a whole... it's the whole package. You know, the mental aspect. I think that the other adults do keep an eye on you. I think that was part of it. But I think we were all expected to behave. And I think I was thinking more in terms of safety with the stories, because there's no way in the world I would go near that place. And I remember other stories too. You know, somebody that lived in the well. You know, something that you weren't supposed to go to on the edge of this other lake, or, you know, there's always something. Never really consciously thought about it until later.
So, what are your feelings about the events of very recent years with the reestablishment of the Native Village of Afognak, Tribal Council, and the Dig Afognak program, and kind of celebration of Afognak, and really focusing on life there and trying to at least preserve the memories of that for future generations.
What do I think about it? Or
what are your feelings about that?
Oh, I think it's wonderful. If it wasn't for the Dig Afognak project, I wouldn't have been able to go back to Afognak like I had a couple of years ago. I wouldn't see the people that I had seen when I was a kid. When you go back to the villages now, everybody is... It's not like it was before. This project, this program brings it back. There's no TV here, there's no cars here. You either interact or you're sitting there by yourself, you know. That's just how it is. And it brings you back, and I think it's wonderful that they're teaching the kids, you know, letting the kids know what, you know, part of what we did. They don't get the full effect, of course, because they go back to the Western culture. But this is somewhat bringing it back for them, and I think that is wonderful.
Well, is there anything else that you would like to share? Anything I didn't ask you?
I would like to say that I'm really, really sad that the church in Afognak was allowed to disintegrate. When I was there 2 years ago, the church was starting to fall apart, and that had been built by by Russian hands. And I can guarantee you the native people in Afognak probably built that thing with the help of people, you know, like the Russians who showed them how to do the tongue and groove type construction. There's several different types of building practices in that church, and I'm just sick that they let that go. I don't know what the politics were behind it, but they should have gotten past that and moved the church. I don't know who owns the land for the old village, but I also think that that a lot of it has been vandalized, and that should have changed. That shouldn't have happened. Do you know who owns the village now?
I think it's a checkerboard of ownership.
Is it?
I mean, for example, where the church is, that property is owned by the church.
Is it?
Yes, and I think there's the priest's house there. I think that's church property. There are some individual plots, I think quite a number of individual ownership. So I don't know exactly, but it's not all owned by any one person
or one entity.
No, some allotments there as well. Well, thank you very much for sharing all that, Liz.
Oh, sure.